Voices of VR podcast.
I'm Frank Steinecke from the University of Hamburg. I'm a professor there for human-computer interaction. And this year I'm the outgoing chair of a 3DI symposium. Usually it's organized by three chairs. One is the incoming, one is the main chair, and this year I'm the outgoing chair. That means this would be my last duty for the 3DI symposium, at least for the next couple of years.
Great. And so maybe you could talk a bit about your own personal research or how you first got into virtuality.
So actually my first interest in VR was basically or growed when I was at Disney in Paris. I saw a 3D stereoscopic movie of Michael Jackson, and I remember when I was maybe 12 years old, I was sitting there in my chair and Michael Jackson was basically floating in front of me, and I tried to reach him and grab him and was thinking about how nice it would be if I could do some interaction now, like changing the scale or something like that. But then a couple of years, basically I study mathematics, computer science, not really related to virtual reality. But then I had my focus during my diploma thesis on mathematics and visualization, and then I switched kind to interactive visualization, and then I changed to interactive 3D visualization, and finally I ended up with interactive virtual environments. And now the focus is really on using perceptual inspired natural user interfaces. So getting an understanding of the entire human information process, starting with perception, action, cognition, and motor processes, and how can we use the limitations kind of the human to improve this interaction process, but also using VR to study the perceptual limitations of the human.
Yeah, to me, VR is really fascinating because it is this cross-section between psychology, ourselves, our human mind, and how our brains are wired, and technology all coming together. And so it sounds like you, by doing these types of 3D UI, you are really looking at that cross-section of psychology and technology. So what kind of insights have you been able to draw from perception, and then how that feeds into how the technology is developed or designed then?
Yeah. So currently we have a lot of limitations still in the technology. So for example, the most prominent lack that we have is the missing haptic feedback. So as soon as we start to interact with virtual objects, usually you don't get any haptic feedback as long as you don't have any specific haptic technology for that. And my group has done some studies in terms of perceptual illusions. So can we induce some kind of the illusion that you actually touch something even if you don't do so? And we did that, for example, with a lot of multi-touch surfaces. So we displayed things stereoscopically above the surface, but gave the users the illusion that they actually touched the object, although they just touched basically the surface a little bit behind the object. So this was a nice approach, combining psychology knowledge in order to give the user a better illusion and a better experience in the virtual environment.
Yeah, it seems like the visual field is very dominant, and yet, you know, there's other parts of our perceptions that are not as accurate, so they can be tricked or fooled in that way. And so maybe you could talk a bit about more what type of actual haptic feedback you were feeding in a way that wasn't necessarily directly one-to-one correlated to these virtual objects.
Yeah. What we actually use is what is called passive haptic feedback. So the idea is we do not really use like haptic devices for that, but just physical objects which are already there, and we use them as kind of proxy objects to represent the haptic feedback that you would give, what you would receive if you would touch a regular virtual object. But we also have recently developed kind of 3D printed prototype devices in which we use vibration technology, which is used in cell phones, which then gives you really kind of frequency vibration. And currently we explore how much you can give users the illusion to touch different textures, even if it's always physically the same texture. So you touch a multi-touch surface, but by inducing additional vibration to the finger while you touch it, we would like to consider, do you really can have the impression of touching grass or water, in particular if it's combined with other senses like the visual or auditory sense.
Yeah, and within 3D UI, there seems to be this trade-off between using your natural hands and natural gestures versus using something with a physical button. And I'm curious, from your own perspective, some of the trade-offs that you see from going with one low fidelity versus the higher fidelity.
Yeah, so usually when we try to develop new techniques in our group, we try to make them as natural as possible. So that means that we do not would like to give the users like haptic gloves or something like that, or any other 3D input devices, but just use your real hands. But on the other hand, also would try to omit having these floating objects in space which you have to touch, and which you often see actually in science fiction movies. But from my perspective, I doubt that this would be the correct way to interact, since it is certainly not natural to touch some floating object in space. Even in the real world, we almost don't have any floating objects. So a lot of the interaction techniques that we do are somehow grounded on the natural interaction paradigm. So I use my hands rather than any input devices, but use like natural support that we know from the real world, like having a table on which you can lay at least your elbows down, which also reduces and decreases the fatigue that you get when you interact and these kind of things.
Yeah, it does seem like fatigue is an issue with doing natural gestures. And maybe you could talk a bit about some of the research in that area in terms of if you're doing something like a leap motion with your hands up in the air, like what are people's tolerances in terms of how long they're able to do that or some of the trade-offs in terms of strain?
Yeah, so usually you cannot do that longer than like 1 or 2 minutes. So this is why really we do not use these kind of interfaces for our work. Whenever we have something floating in space, we really make sure that the users are able to put their elbow on a desk, so really in a comfortable position. And we have also done some experiments which actually showed that this will also increase the efficiency in terms of the interaction performance. So we have a lot of also, of course, demos in which we use a Kinect and you have some mid-air gestures. You can use them for like very short, limited amount of time, but definitely not for precise interaction, which require just longer time. So my personal note on that is as long as you just require it for 5 seconds, then it's fine. But if you want to do longer work, it's really not good to have your arms in air.
And so what about the, you know, it seems like if you're using something that's just on the flat table, you may be only getting like 3 degrees of freedom if you're using like a multi-touch sensor or something like that. Or maybe talk about that in terms of like, it seems like when you have your hands up in the air, you're able to get that full 6 degrees of freedom. But then if you have them resting on a table, you may not be able to manipulate objects in that on all those 6 degrees, or maybe you are. Maybe you could talk a bit about that.
Actually combine both. So what we actually do is we have a stereoscopic multi-touch table, for example, in one of our setups, and in addition we use a depth camera on top of the multi-touch surface, so we can actually combine the touch interaction on the surface with the mid-air interaction above the surface. And we did a lot of experiments in which we try to investigate at which display depth of the virtual objects one of the other is more advantage over the other. We found that as long as you leave your objects quite close to the touch surface, so within a range of 15 centimeters or something like that, you're much more efficient if you use the touch support for all your interactions. If the objects are displayed with more negative parallax, meaning that they're hovering higher above the table, then at that point you should switch and actually use your fingers in mid-air by using the additional depth cameras.
Yeah, and in terms of measuring the efficiency or, you know, how well a certain technique performs, what are some of the specific metrics and techniques that you use in terms of evaluating and comparing and contrasting these different techniques?
A typical setup that we use, for example, selection task is based on Fitt's law experiments. That means you give a predefined set of targets that the user has to select. They can be displayed on the touch surface, for example, but they can also be displayed somewhere in 3D space. And there is a specific norm that you can use just to select these. And therefore we measure, for example, the time, the number of errors, the accuracy that they did. And you can also combine these metrics and kind of the throughput. And so the higher the throughput gets, the better the techniques get.
Yeah. I see. And so when you're comparing doing virtual 3D interactions versus doing real interactions, it seems like in some contexts the real interactions may be better. And then in other contexts it may be that the virtual reality interactions may be more efficient or better. So maybe you could talk a bit about what is that line between when it should be a virtual training simulation versus a real training simulation?
I mean, that's a good question, right? This also goes to the direction of the killer application for virtual reality environments. I think currently we are still in a stage where the technology does not allow us to do like everything really efficiently. So we have to trick a lot so that the virtual environment is really beneficial over a corresponding real world task. Of course, on the other hand, you can do in the virtual environment all the things that you can't do in the real world, right? You can simulate things which would be dangerous in the real world without any danger in the virtual environment. And this is, of course, a great promise, for example, rehabilitation, psychology studies, phobia studies, and something like that.
Yeah, and in terms of some of the things that you've seen, you know, over the last 3 years, what's some of the research within the realm of 3D UI that you've seen that really sticks out?
I think just what happens currently since the last 1 or 2 years regarding the hardware which gets available due to these smartphone era VR or 3D UI that we currently face. So it literally like every week or so there's another head-mounted display coming out. And this is really something which is really surprising for somebody who's working now in this area for 2 decades or so. And there was really slow progression the last 20 years or something like that, at least from the hardware's perspective. And now within the last 1 or 2 years, it's even just hard to read all your emails and Twitters about new devices which come up. So this is really something surprising. And I'm really expecting this just to continue for the next couple of years. And so we really face this exponential growth now and have really now a situation where it's really getting fascinating what's coming out within the next couple of weeks.
Yeah, and one of the things that coming here to the IEEE VR conference that I'm sort of seeing emerging is that there is a very strong presence of Germany within virtual reality. And maybe you could speak to a little bit of like the connection between VR and Germany.
Yeah, I mean, it's not only Germans. I think in entire Europe, we have a quite strong VR community. So in France, the UK, as well as Germany. In Germany, there's also like a specific interest or special interest group in virtual reality and augmented reality, in which are basically all professors and postdocs in Germany who are interested in virtual reality organize also workshop annually, so one time a year. And yeah, and a lot of people are there pretty much also interested in using VR for really industrial applications. So there are a lot of corporations, for example, airplanes and CAD and car automotive, as well as gas and oil industry. But it's a nice mixture of people who are really interested in industrial applications, but also people like my group who is more interested like in the basic research knowledge, something like that. Yeah.
And where is some of the research that you've been doing then being applied? You know, is it in industrial corporate applications, or where have you seen some of the stuff that you've been doing kind of play out into the world?
Yeah. So currently, most of the things that we actually did are really basic knowledge. So we are really interested in how do we perceive the virtual environment, how can we manipulate users in the virtual environment, and how can we manipulate how they behave. So this is not like a direct link to industrial applications, but we have some applications or other projects in which we developed, for example, micro unmanned aerial vehicles, which can be steered and controlled in a virtual reality setup as a simulation. And this is then applied to a real world application. But for most of the things, at least that we do in my group, we are really more interested on this basic research part, not so much on how you can apply that within the next 1 or 2 years, but maybe 10 or 15 years later.
And it seems like there is like this parallel development with virtual reality with all these academic and sort of corporate applications over the last 20, 30 years. And then this new emerging consumer VR market that is starting with games and entertainment, but potentially going beyond that. But I'm curious how, from your perspective, after being in this field for over 20 years, how you see over the last couple of years everything developing and where you see it going.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty interesting and pretty amazing what currently happens. And it's really nice to see how this new consumer technology also improves the way how we can perform our studies or also attract the interest of our students. So when the Wiimote came out or the Microsoft Kinect or now the Oculus Rift, this is really like hardware which our students know and they really want to get their hands on that. So it's really easy now and very interesting to get good students to work with that. And I assume that this will continue and will really lead to the fact that VR will be used outside the lab, which means it will be used in our daily living rooms or in working environments.
And finally, what do you see as the ultimate potential of virtual reality and what it might be able to enable?
Yeah. I mean, if we have like the perfect ultimate display, what we all are aiming for, then we can do whatever we want. I mean, this is the major goal of virtual reality. Then, of course, we will face all these ethical questions, right? I mean, if we can do anything, the question is what is the appropriate thing to do and what would be inappropriate content that we don't want to show. And I think these kind of things are the future topics that our community now really has to face, since we are not only the last like 500 persons here at this community talking about virtual reality, but there are outside millions of people who will get their hands on virtual reality very soon. And there are a lot of ethical questions that I think had to be answered by this community.
Great. Well, thank you.
You're welcome. Thanks.
And thank you for listening. If you'd like to support the Voices of VR podcast, then please consider becoming a patron at patreon.com/voicesofvr. Thank you.